Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, folks, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fuck sticks, what the fuckadelics, what the fuckstables? How are you? What's happening? Mark Maron here. This is my show, WTF. Thank you for listening. Thank you for always listening. I appreciate it. I appreciate the input. I appreciate your ears. I'm glad that you enjoy the show. If you're on a run right now, you can do it. Go, 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 go. If you're in your cubicle right now, you can get through it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. If you're just at home, maybe cooking something, watch your measurements. Don't screw it up. Don't add too much. Check the oven. Check it. If you're driving, hey, chill out. Relax. There's nothing you can do about this. It's out of your control. All right. Just wait it out. There's no reason for it. And it's not your fault. I mean, you left early enough, right? Am I right? I mean, how early can you leave? I mean, you didn't know it would be like this. It's just bullshit. God damn it. What could be causing this? Oh, this guy. Maybe you're driving a truck and you're out there in the open road trying not to fall asleep. Wake up, wake up, wake up. It was just in a Spike Lee movie. So what's happening? My guest today is Patricia Williams, known as Ms. Pat, on the road as a comedian. Amazing stories of perseverance, survival, transcendence. Oh, God, it's, buckle up. It's going to be good. Let me tell you where I'm at right now, and then we'll ease into the conversation with Ms. Pat. I took Monkey to the vet because Monkey's still going at his junk, still licking his own dick, and he was on antibiotics for 2 weeks, and it is so traumatic for me to get that goddamn cat to the vet. I can get him in the cage, but I'm starting to think that I didn't socialize my cats properly. Maybe I should have handled them more. Maybe I should have made them more comfortable with me and people, as opposed to just let them continue to be wild and dictate their own goddamn behavior. Like, you have no choice with cats. But I just got a call from the doc. Says, we got to put him under just to give him a bath and get a urine sample because he's fighting. The fuck, man? Yeah, I take him to the vet. He's howling, howling. It's like no other cat is doing that there. Why's it got to be my kid? Why's it got to be my cat? Why does my cat got to be the drama addict? Why is my cat such a pussy? Huh? Why? And then I feel bad. I didn't want to bring him in, but I'm going out of town for a couple of days. I got someone watching the house, but it's like he's going to be all fucking loopy because that vet, he always gives me the cat half-cocked, just wasted, shit-faced. It's not as endearing as maybe a kid who might have had a little gas at the dentist, like that YouTube video. That's funny. A fucked up cat's not funny because it doesn't know what's going on. Neither does a kid, but a cat's a cat. So it's going to freak out on top of that and try and run and hide. Whatever, man. You know what? I'm not complaining. I exercised. I had a overly thick smoothie. My cat is at the vet being taken care of. I'm doing responsible shit. All right? Okay. Here's the deal. Ms. Pat has been making the podcast rounds a bit. I didn't know anything about her. Joe had her on, and I know Ari had her on. But, you know, I did a little investigating because her fans were telling me, like, you know, I got to have her on. I got to have her on. And I watched some of her stand-up, and I got it. It was good. It seemed to be coming from a place of genuine storytelling and very dark stories. in the sense that they were harrowing. But the one thing that I don't experience and what I don't talk about a lot and I don't have the opportunity to, I guess I could make more opportunity to, is what it's like to grow up poor and black in America. I can't even begin to understand what the black experience is like, even being told it through fiction or through music or through some biographies I have read in my life. There is just, I am completely outside of that experience. And I got to be honest with you, talking to Ms. Pat to me is mind blowing because the black struggle is something I'm familiar with in the pop culture that I consume. But the truth of the matter is I don't know the truth of the matter. And when I talk to Ms. Pat, it's just fucking mind blowing because poverty, no matter what color it is devastating. And the community that, the ghetto communities that exist in this country have their own set of politics, rules, customs, survival modes that I'm not necessarily privy to in terms of people I talk to. So for me, talking to Ms. Pat and having her be able to frame it with a certain amount of an amazing amount of humility and an amazing amount of humor was just fucking mind blowing to me. And it maybe I'm shut off. Maybe, I don't think I'm closed minded in any way, but I do not know the experience. And it was powerful. There's no other way to frame it other than powerful and powerfully funny. But it is sort of upsetting to me that I don't know. I don't have a real sense of that experience, and all I can look at it is as a social phenomenon or a political phenomenon or just a very sad and tragic phenomenon that ghetto life still exists and persists. And when I talk to Ms. Pat, it's like you don't get the feeling that it's ever going to end. It's almost like it's relentless, very devastating. But nonetheless, this is Ms. Pat is certainly the best person available for me to talk to about her story and for me to learn something and hear somebody whose experience is completely different than mine. So let's talk to Ms. Pat. Like I said,
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Ready. So, Ms. Pat, I guess I'm the last podcaster to get you. How many have you done now? You done everybody's?
Just about everybody. I've done all the good ones. How about that?
Oh, that's good. That's good. I don't know how I missed you. How did I miss you?
Oh, don't nobody know who the fuck I am, Mark.
That's going to change, Pat.
I see. That's what Joe Rogan said when I did his.
Oh, really? He said, you're about to happen?
That's what he said. He said, I'm about to pop like a chicken. But I was like, you must haven't seen my stomach. I'm wearing a spank.
But you've been around for how long?
I've been doing comedy 12 years.
12 years?
Yeah.
And where'd you start out at?
Atlanta.
Is that where you grew up?
I'm born and raised, but I live in Indianapolis now.
How'd you end up in Indianapolis?
My fucking husband worked at General Motors. And
that's a good job, right?
Yeah, he didn't want to take the buyout, so he didn't want to go to Dallas.
Yeah.
So we moved to Indy.
But was that a big change? Must be a big change.
Hell, yes. That was a big, it's slower. Nobody can fix hair there. We live in a neighborhood with all white people, and they all know each other, and they all go to church every week, and they...
Was that like? But is it weird? Do you go to church with them?
I don't go to fucking church with them. they were so homey, and so when I first started in Atlanta, when you're a comic, you got to get out and grind your
ass
off.
Yeah.
And that's something. and my husband didn't understand. So he moved me to this small city. Say, well, you know, hopefully this shit is just, you know, a little phase she going through.
Right. And, oh, the comedy.
Yeah, the comedy.
Yeah, well, you get past that.
And then, you know, I started in like an urban setting. So right. It was no urban setting there in right. Indy. So I had to kind of figure out, well, shit, how do I write something for everybody?
Yeah, and well, we were just talking about that before we were coming out here, that we're both doing this show today, and you're concerned about it.
I'm always concerned about it. I mean, it's Comedy Central, you know, and I'm kind of intimidated. Then I look and I'm taping with you and fucking Joe Rogan. Oh, my God, why they got me taping with him? I'd rather tape with a bunch of nobodies than. But my manager was like, Pat, come on, just get over it, okay? You're just as good as anybody else.
You've been doing it 12 years, and your life story is compelling, and you're a natural storyteller, but you're still a little hard on yourself.
I'm always hard on myself.
But in white audiences make you nervous?
White people used to make me nervous. I'm black, Mark. Damn. I committed a bunch of crimes before this shit.
Well, so that nervousness goes both ways, I'm sure.
Well, it has a lot to do with my childhood because, you know, I grew up in the inner city of Atlanta. I grew up with an alcoholic mom, you know, who taught me, you know, like, and literally she told me this. She said, white people are better than you, so don't ever look them in the eye. So when you raise a kid like that, I grew up really thinking that y'all was so much different from me. So when I became a comedian and I started talking about my life, you know, people were like, oh my God, you funny. And I'm like, oh, who the fuck are you? And get away from me. I'm talking about shit from the hood. You can't relate.
Right.
And so they just took a like. White people took a liking to me. And I wasn't used to white people taking a liking to me. And I realized, fuck, we all the same.
Yeah.
Who taught my mama that stupid shit?
Well, I think that stupid shit had been being taught for generations.
Yeah.
How long had her family been in Atlanta?
They was born and raised there from the South.
Yeah, so the South is the South. Yes. You know, that shit gets ingrained in your head.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's what she taught me. And then, you know, it's the cycle that went through our family, teenage pregnancy.
Right.
My mama had her first kid at 15. I had my first kid at 14.
Really?
Yeah, I had two kids by the time I was 16. So my, you know, she used to tell me stuff like, if a man don't beat you, he don't love you. So honestly, when my baby daddy would punch me in the same eye on Friday, I was like, oh, this Negro love me. But one time he hit me with a skate and I was like, fuck, is this love? I can do without it.
Yeah. How many sisters and brothers do you have?
I have one sister and three brothers.
And they're all around? They all right?
Yeah, they're all on drugs. Except one brother. I have fucked up, you know, upbringing, but you know,
yeah.
My sister's on drugs. She just got out of jail. My brother, he's in jail. My other brother, in and out of jail. But that's how we grew up. That's the cycle of the ghetto. It's
yeah.
Like you just keep recycling shit.
What is it that stops people from, like, you got out?
You got to want to get out. And, you know, that's the question I get answered a lot. They was like, you know, because I was 16 years old with two kids by a married man that beat on me all the fucking time.
By a married man?
He was married.
And you were just across town kind of thing?
Well, his wife lived in Decatur. I lived in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was married when I first met him. I was 12 when I met him. He was 22.
Oh, my God. How'd you meet him?
Coming from a fucking YMCA party for kids.
And he was like a counselor or something?
No.
He was a kid too? He's 22. That's not a kid.
No, he thought he was a kid. My sister was dating one of his friends.
Uh-huh.
So we was coming from a party and he had a car. So he gave us all a ride.
Right.
And I was the only one that didn't have a boyfriend that night because my sister and my cousin had a boyfriend.
Right.
But, you know, he thought I had a really nice figure.
You were 12.
Fuck yeah. You know, all 12s, you know, look like they're ready to fuck, but they're really not.
Right.
You know, like picking the fucking tomato too soon.
Yeah.
So he thought, you know, I guess he thought I looked good. He was the first person that ever really paid me some attention.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't get any attention. I didn't have a fucking daddy, so I didn't get any attention from my mom, and I didn't get any attention from my brother. So he acted like I was the shit. And I didn't know in return you had to get this grown-ass dude pussy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went along with it. I thought he loved me.
So you had 2 years before you give him pussy?
No. I mean, I think I was 12, and I turned 13 a couple of months out, then I got pregnant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So can we, this guy's a child molester is what he was.
You know what? He now he's a child molester.
Right.
But then you ask him that, he's your age.
Mm-hmm.
He'll tell you that he's not.
Yeah.
And I asked him one time and I say, you know, I don't want to say I kind of fault you for fucking up my life. I said, but what do you have to say? He said, well, I said, I was 12 years old. Who fucked 12 year olds?
Yeah.
He said, your mind and body wasn't 12. That shit hit me in my chest like a brick.
Yeah. Well, that's a rationalization.
Yeah, that's how child molesters think.
Yeah.
Hey, if it got a little hair on it, it's ready.
Is there others, though? I mean, was he a guy that you...
Yeah, I think it was, but he always messed with younger girls. Yes, right. He had like 20-some kids. You know, I got pregnant.
20 kids.
Yeah, he had a bunch of fucking kids.
So your kids got a bunch of, you know, like 20 step half brothers.
Yeah, no, in the hood we don't count that what's outside the family.
Okay.
We don't do that half shit unless it's by the mama and you live in that household.
That it's just another kid.
Yeah,
that you might be related to.
Yes, yes. But the good thing about this dude, he signed all the kids' birth certificates, so they know, you know, on Facebook they all connect, but not in person, because they see that name like, hey, is your daddy there? And it was like, oh, that's my daddy. Oh, really? Another one of y'all just popping up out of nowhere?
Oh my god.
So, you know.
So there's a whole fan group or a whole like.
It's a bunch of them. You know.
Now, did he have a relationship with your kids? I mean, throughout.
You know what, Mark? I tell you, he took me through a lot. Like, he beat me. He shot me.
He shot you.
Yes, he shot me in the back of the head.
In the back of the head.
Yes.
On purpose.
He said it was a mistake, but you know, he said the gun went off, but you know, because he was hitting me with the gun, so he said it was a mistake. I think he was trying to fucking kill me. I was 15 at the time, so.
But how does it get to that point? I mean, so he's 15. He's married. You're 15.
Yeah, I was 15 at the time he shot me.
Right. So, but you had his kid at 13, and he had.
But
two.
By this time, you got to remember, you got to control something. You got to manipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
So by this time, whatever he said went. Yeah. You know, I was just fucking naive because I think I was a young girl. I was a young girl looking for a father figure.
Sure.
So now you got me, and I'm thinking that you know you the answer to all. You finally I found somebody that loved
he
me.
He just stepped in and took over.
Yeah, he stepped in and took over. He showed me what I didn't get at home: love.
Right.
You know, in the beginning, compassion. He, to me, he was taking care of me.
Yeah.
So he was my fucking answer. He was my white knight.
Right.
But then that's when the abuse come. You know, the talking down to me. I'm bitches. I'm hoes. Beating on me. I'm fucking 14. What do I know about having a man?
Yeah.
What do I know about living? What do I know about anything? I mean, I get pregnant and I don't even know you. Married to your wife knock on my door.
And what happened that day?
I was 13. She knocks on my door and she asks for me because my street name was Rabbit.
Was she a grown woman?
Yeah, she was like 19. So she knocks on my door and she said, I want to see Rabbit. And I said, I'm Rabbit. I'm thinking she's some bitch that want to play with me in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm pregnant, but I'm really a kid.
Yeah.
So she's told me who she was and that she was she was his wife. And I was so fucking confused. And I'm like, a wife? And I was like, well, how's you his wife? You got to be his girlfriend first. I'm his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she was like, how old are you? I said, I'm 13. So she pulled me outside. This is a true story.
Yeah.
And she buy me ice cream from the truck. And she want to discuss me having an abortion. And I was like, no. And I'm like, you know, all you're going to give me is a fucking bomb pop to kill my baby. But in my mind, if I had this baby, it'll be somebody that loved me.
Yeah.
And that was the main reason that I kept that baby. Because at that time, he wasn't beating on me. It wasn't until after I had that first baby. Then he got me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Everything. It was like crack. Right. It was like crack or heroin. Any strong drug out there. That's how I had to have him.
Right.
Whatever he said, that went. And, you know, plus I had a mama that taught me early on, if a man don't beat you, he don't love you. So I'm thinking every punch is a fucking Valentine gift.
Yeah, yeah. But you felt the pain.
Yes, but I had to grow up. I had to start saying, you know, well, what the fuck? I had a daughter. What was so crazy? And she see him stomping me and beating me and putting his, you know, talking to me in the kind of way. I said, well, fuck, how's she going to grow up and get a man to treat her if he's treating me like this?
When did you have that realization? How old were you?
After... probably 15. About 15, 16.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And your mother was she drunk all the time?
She was drunk pretty much all the time. And my mama died when I was 16. So I'm out there with two kids.
And mama?
No mama, no daddy.
Oh, my God.
Raising two kids, and I started selling crack. So when I started selling crack, that was the way for me to, you know, take care of my kids, because who really going to give a 16-year-old a job? I tried to get a job.
Where?
I tried to waitress at the Waffle House.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Waffle House, it was called the Heather House back then.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was trying to go to school and do the right thing because I had two fucking kids, but it wasn't working. And I tried to get better jobs, and they was like, where's your work permit? Like, I got fucking two kids. Who need a work permit when they got two kids?
So are you still going to school with the kids?
I was trying, yeah. Because I was in, eighth grade?
Yeah, I can't believe it. Just seems overwhelming to me.
Everybody, you know, people, my main question I get is, how you survive? I don't fucking know. All I kept thinking of, I got to figure out a way to get so my kids don't be recycled into this bullshit that I was born into.
Right. So when you're a kid, you got what? You say you got one sister and two brothers?
Three brothers.
And you're all in the same house. What's the age difference?
We all about 2 years apart.
Same father?
Supposedly. I can't tell when I got a brother who looked like he biracial. Yeah. So, and my daddy is fucking extra black, like he played on the Django, and I'm sitting up here and I'm brown skinned and my mama dark skinned. I'm like, some of this shit ain't adding up. Somebody was creeping somewhere. So supposedly we supposed to have the same father.
And you never met him, or you did?
Oh yeah, I took care of him the last 3-4 years of his life after I got to know him.
Really? And how old were you when you got to know him?
I met him for the first time. He stopped by my house when I was like 11 to whoop us. And so he fucked around and hit us. Never seen this dude a day in my life. And
he just came by to hit you?
He came out to whoop my sister's ass, but he couldn't tell us apart.
Why was he whooping your sister's ass?
Because she supposed to have been disrespecting to my mama. And so I walk in the door and he don't know me from my sister, and he hit me. And at the time, I'm really into wrestling, so I beat the shit out of him. Me and my brother, we tagged each other in. We was DDTing him and everything. We was kicking his ass.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I met him. Then he disappeared. Then later on in life, when I became a kind of a big drug dealer, I was seeing from time to time.
To sell him drugs?
No. He wasn't on drugs. He was an alcoholic.
Oh, just an old school.
Old school alcoholic, yeah. I don't think I want to sell my parents drugs. Bought my mom a lot of weed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did your mom, how did she handle all the kids? I guess it sounds like everybody just raised themselves anyways.
Yeah,
you figured out the neighborhood raised you. In a way. Because everybody was around.
Well, my brothers then was in and out of jail.
Yeah.
And my mama I moved out when I was 16. Like 16 after. See, what it was is I got pregnant again. I had a baby at 14. Had a baby at 15. I got pregnant at 16.
Yeah.
So we had a caseworker. This is back when the caseworkers used to come to your house.
Right.
So I told the caseworker, I said, I don't want to have another baby because I cannot afford it. But this dude has got my mind. I got to figure out something. So she said, well, let me show you how to become emancipated minor and you can get your own abortion.
Yeah.
So I got my first abortion when I was 16 after I divorced my mama.
Uh-huh.
So once I did that.
You had to divorce your mama?
Yeah, you have to be emancipated.
Oh, emancipated from the slavery of motherhood.
Yes. Pretty fucking much.
Yeah.
So once I became emancipated minor, I got my own welfare check and I got my own food stamp. So I moved out.
Mm-hmm. And you'd already had two kids.
I already had two kids.
From that same dude.
The same dude.
And this third one was his too.
The third one was his too.
Oh my God. Well, this is why it's so astounding, I think, and why, you know, with all these white dudes you're on the podcast, is like we never get to hear stories like this from somebody who's telling them directly to us with a certain amount of transcendence, with a certain amount of confidence in somebody who's come through something.
Yeah.
We just I don't know why it works like that, because I wonder about, like, I have a hard time getting black comics on my show because I don't know why we don't talk more, but we just don't.
Because society wants us to stay divided.
Is it society? I can blame society?
They tell you, the mainstream media make us look one way, then they tell you what they perceive, what the ghetto is about, and, you know, they come up with all these ideas of what really goes on in the ghetto when they don't know shit.
Yeah.
They don't know shit.
Well, I think that's what's amazing about the stuff that I've seen of yours, is, and the reason why, you know, I think that you're not going to have any problem translating, and that your fears, though, you have them. The thing is that I think that in my mind, there is a stereotype that is hit over the head, that, you know, that this is the way it is. And a lot of times it the story of transcending that and saying, like, I lived it, this is my truth, and this is why it's fucked up, is different than, like, you know, just playing along with the stereotype.
Well, my thing is, Mark, is that sometimes I get, like, I talk to my manager a lot, and I get a little worried about is people thinking that I'm the same person that I was back then. Because, I remember telling a story about how when I used to sell crack, I used to make a lot of fucking money. And a lot of my hiding spots was in my kids' underwear.
Yeah.
So this guy was like, oh, who want to talk to somebody who hid drugs in their kids' underwear? So I'm like, do you understand that I was 16 at the time with two fucking kids? I was a fucking kid myself. I didn't know right from wrong, really.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm doing what I see everybody else is doing. And one of the things that kind of bothers me, do people think that Patricia today is that same person who Rabbit was, which was my street name,
yeah,
in 1988. I'm not the same fucking person. I wouldn't dare do the things that I did, and either with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you 50, look at the shit you probably did. We don't even know.
Yeah,
would you make the same mistakes that you made?
I would not hide crack in my daughter's underwear again.
Me either. You know, my son don't remember a lot of this shit, but my daughter do.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to go tell my daughter, I did a lot of this stuff to survive. I was not the best mom. I was a kid like you. But my whole thing was keeping us together. And my daughter don't look down on me like that. And she said, you know, I give you props because you could have dropped me off anywhere. You
yeah.
could have lost me. You always taking care of me.
How old is she now?
My daughter's 28.
It's amazing.
And I kept her from going through half of the shit. Like, I was molested and went through a whole bunch of shit. I talked to my, even after I got married, I told my daughter every day, I said, if my husband ever touch you, I will fuck him up. Nobody means more to me than you do.
You got molested too? On top of everything else?
Well, that's way before.
Arguably, you were molested when that guy got you pregnant.
I mean, yeah, I went through a lot of shit.
Before that, too,
yes,
people coming in and out of the house.
Well, I was raised in a bootleg house.
Yeah.
You know, we was raised in my grandfather's bootleg house where you had drunk people there around the clock.
What was it, rural? Where's a bootleg house?
It was bootleg house in Atlanta. You know what a bootleg
sure.
house is?
Sure. Well, what? Like illegal liquor, right?
Illegal liquor, yes.
And they were making it there.
My grandfather was.
But was it, I picture that to be more of a country situation.
I guess it was like country back in the 70s and 80s. Shit, they done cut down a few trees and made a few rows now.
Yeah, where was the still? Where'd they make it?
Well, he bought it. He went out and bought it and brought it back in gallon jugs.
I see.
And he had customers.
So he
all
went
day.
To the hills. And
he went somewhere and got it on the bus.
And they on the bus.
Yes.
Not a truck.
He's no. Just,
he bring
by 5 or 6 gallons back on a model bus.
So this is your mother's father.
We live with him.
Yeah, and in a house? Big
in a house.
House,
big house in Decatur.
So you never know who's going to come through a bootleg house.
No, it was always drunks and prostitutes and construction workers, the number man before the lottery came out.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it was shit like that.
And somebody got to you.
Well, what you think?
I guess a party's a party.
Well, you're not watching your kids, anybody
right.
fucking get to them. But I said what I went through, my kids would never go through. So even after I was married and my daughter was in high school, I still questioned her. To one day we had a conversation. She was like, can you please stop asking me this? You've been asking me this for 10 years
Which
now.
Which ones? Which questions?
I said, if my husband ever touched you, I'd kill him. And she was like, Mom, by now, don't you think I would have told you?
This is the husband you're with now.
Yes.
You trust him now, though.
Well, I'm from a background where you can only trust people so much. Of course I trust him, but you know, people pop up all the time and you not really know they character, right?
Right.
You probably thought you had a friend and turn out that fucker wasn't a friend.
Yeah, people will surprise you.
People will surprise you in this fucking world. So, you know, I trust him. Honestly, I do, but you know, I've been let down so much in my life, you only get so much.
Right. So you sort of temper your trust. You know, like it's there, but, you know, it's always ready to be shattered somehow.
Well, pretty much.
But was your grandfather sounds like a character. Was he a nice guy?
Yeah. I mean, he was a nice guy. He ran a bootleg house, and, you know, we did a lot of shit in that house. I saw a lot of shit in that house. Like, I saw him shoot a lady, like, with 2 pistols at one time.
You did?
Yeah, I was like 7 years old. And
dead?
She wasn't dead, because I guess he wasn't that good. He shot her with a .38.
That's a big gun. Big
yeah.
enough. Not
well,
a .22.
It hit her in the stomach and the legs and shit, and I remember him shooting her fingers off.
What?
Yeah.
He shot her fingers off.
That's he shot like one finger, because she would call him a black faggot.
Uh-huh.
So he shot her and her finger went off. And it
How
was,
old are you?
I was probably about 7.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Quite a life there.
Yeah, I mean, we saw everything.
What she was just drunk and fucked
she
up?
She called him a black faggot.
And that was it.
And, you know, you don't call old black men faggots.
So you get your finger shot off.
Yeah, you get your fucking finger shot off. No, so he shot him.
But it sounds like, what happened after that? Were there cops? I mean,
he told my aunt that day, and he said, go pour out the moonshine. And I'm thinking, pour out the moonshine? This bitch out here on the ground, Dad.
Yeah.
And he was like, call the police. And my
hide the shit.
Hide the, yeah, she yeah. had to go pour it out, and then she called 911. Oh, and they gave him, I think they gave him like 15 years in prison for shooting that lady, because we thought she was going to die, but she didn't die.
She didn't die. But no. He did jail time. So that was the end of the bootleg house.
Yeah. And so we moved. And that's when a lot of shit started to, you know, that when the foundation started to crumble, because granddaddy always had a foundation. Right. At least she was going to eat and have a place to stay.
And so after that, after he went to jail, your mom had to go out on her own. And she was what? 20?
She was in her 20s, yes. Yeah. Which was an alcoholic, came out of an abusive relationship with my real daddy. I was a baby when she left him.
Yeah.
And she was just, my mama had an old spirit. She just, whatever my daddy did to her, she never fucking bounced back. Because I had a stepfather that she just took all that anger out on this little nice dude, was a mechanic. And so when he left, we was just fucked. She just, to me, she gave up.
I guess it's hard not to when you grow up in that. You don't know any better. And I mean, it's amazing that you found the fortitude to at least know better.
Well, you know, I wanted better. Those kids made me strive even. Well, I say this. It started back when I was in elementary school. I had a teacher named Miss True. She died this year. And she used to tell me, I used to go to school. I was dirty because my mama didn't really give a fuck. And she was like my second or third grade teacher. And she said, Pat, you can be anything in the world you want to be. All you got to do is believe and dream. And I'm 42, Mark, and I still, when I'm getting low, I always quote Miss Troop. When I did time in prison, I always quoted Miss Troop. This is how I started, but this is not how I'm going to end up.
Well, it seems like you're doing all right now.
I'm doing pretty good.
All right, let's go back to, like, all right, so now you're 12 years old. You started this relationship with this dude. He's 22. You have his baby. Then he starts beating on you. And then you have another one of his babies.
Yep.
And because all the beatings, that means love to you.
Yeah, at that point, yeah.
Yeah, so you got two babies. And now, when was the first time you got shot?
I was over my house with dating another dude, and he come over there acting like he's jealous. So, you know, in the hood, ain't nothing like seeing your man fight over your old. That means something.
Uh-huh.
And he was a pussy. He didn't hit the dude. He let the dude go and hit me, and the gun went off and supposedly fucking blew a nice little piece of my head off in the back.
Yeah.
I guess it just cracked my skull. I don't really know.
But you got lucky.
I got lucky.
But he carried a gun.
Yeah, he always carried a gun because he was a pussy. So after that, you know, I immediately, after I got out of the hospital, I went back with him. Because I was like, oh, he loved me. He shot me. Fucking stupid as all get out. Then I get shot again. This all in the same year, arguing with a dude in the trap. You know what that is, where they sell the drugs at. And just jealous. And he shot me in my fucking titty and blew my nip off.
From the side, I guess.
He went up under my arm.
Yeah.
With a 45 and blew my fucking nip off.
Yeah, so you're one nipple shy.
Well, it's there. It might be scattered, smothered, it's covered, but
it's just a unique nipple now. It's a special
it's
nipple.
It's some damaged areola going on. It's still suckable.
Yeah. Didn't lose your sensitivity, did you?
For a while, but...
It's back?
Yeah, it's back now. It's like having a C-section. You be numb for a while, and after you look up one day like, damn, I feel something down there.
Finally, good.
Yes. So,
well, that's a so. When you started selling drugs, it was out of desperation to keep the kids fed.
It was something that was going on in my community. Everybody was selling. Either you were smoking it or you were selling it. And I never been into drugs and alcohol and shit like that. So I was like, and everybody, you know, was looking nice. Started to look like they call them crackhead. They were just looking horrible. I was like, nah, I'm not doing this shit.
So wait, but so that was the first wave of it.
Yeah, so I started selling drugs, and I got really...
But then how you getting drugs? Do you got another dude you got to deal with that's watching, you know, that's like on top of you with his drugs?
No. Actually, I started with my welfare check. I went out and I bought $250 worth, and $250 worth should bring you $500. Then I partnered up with a friend in my old neighborhood, and we just put our money together, and we just kept flipping it and kept flipping it.
So that's when you took the nickname Rabbit?
No, I was always called Rabbit as a kid.
Who did that? Your grandfather?
My stepfather called me Rabbit. So I couldn't go out there and say Patricia. That shit don't sound tough at all.
No.
So I can't. Everybody, you know, you in the hood, everybody got a nickname. Slim, Black, you know, Big Daddy, Little Daddy, Fat Man. So you got to have a nickname.
So that's what's interesting to me about, like, the community. Because it seems that despite the fact that shit was horrible, that the community sort of stays intact and everybody watches everybody go through their shit and everyone comes around. Some people don't make it, and but y'all know each other.
Well, you know, you get, after a while, you get immune to that shit. You know, it just, shit that go, it's a cycle. It just keep going. You know, I tell a bit, I say, you know, it's like being on welfare. Welfare is like diabetes. If the mama get it, there's a good chance the daughters might get it. So it's just a cycle. And it's up to you, say, hey, I don't want to be in this cycle anymore. You know, my mama was a teenage mom. I was a teenage mom. My sister was a teenage mom. Her girls are teenage. I got a niece 20 years old with 5 fucking kids.
God damn it. Who are these guys fucking these little kids?
Well, she's 20. The guys her age is fucking her, but it's okay. It's a cycle.
But if she's got 5, she must have started when she was 15.
Well, no, she probably started when she started in elementary school. I mean, like 12.
Oh, my God. I don't know how
it's the real fucking world that people don't really know that exists. I mean, it's a cycle. It just keep going. It keeps going until.
But it's interesting. It's a real world in that community. But you know, like in the world that I live in, you know, child molesting is like way up there on the, like, that's fucked up. But it seems like that's just something that happens, and it's drugs or shooting people that gets people put in jail. But I mean, child molesting seems just par for the course.
Yeah, I mean. You're pretty much right there. Yeah,
they just let it keep happening. Well, no one's calling anybody on that one. And I think that because of that, that's why the same patterns repeat themselves.
Yeah, teenage pregnancy, insulated. Drugs, child molesting, all of that stuff. And, you know, and I have a niece that have 4 kids that live with me right now, yeah. Mark, that dropped out. I had cussed at my sister's kids for 10 years. She came back and got them. So I was like, okay, bitch, these are your kids. Do what you want to do with them. But I tried to stop that fucking cycle of dropout, teenage pregnant, because, you know, it didn't happen to my daughter. She came back and got her daughter. Her daughter, who lives with me now, has 4 kids and 23. So I'm telling my niece, when you get out of the hood, don't fucking go back. It's like fucking getting out of jail. Don't go commit another crime to go back to jail. My niece fought me like a dog in the beginning. Oh, you live in this big old house in this white neighborhood. You want to act like you bougie. You want to act like you better. I say, bitch, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to show my kids something better. I'm trying to make sure my kids graduate and don't have kids. And it took me about 3 to 4 months to dig in her brain to realize her getting turned up don't pay no fucking bills, boo-boo. Yeah. Getting turned up don't provide for your kids. Getting turned up don't help your kids but get a better education living in the hood. She finally realized. She called me yesterday. She said, I'm so glad that you got us out the hood. And I said, well, what went on? My niece who got the 5 kids, her kid's father had some kids. The little boy shot himself in the face yesterday in Atlanta.
Oh my God.
3 years old. And she said, that could have been my son. You know why? Because y'all too busy getting turned up, getting high, putting guns and drugs around these kids. Because it's okay. It's okay if your pants is hanging and you being tough. I mean, that's the image that you want to show your young black kid.
It's amazing that it took 4 months for her to realize any sort of truth.
Oh, shit.
Around
I'm
that.
Still fighting her. I'm still fighting her. But she's beginning to realize. She's like, oh, you think you know, at first she was saying, I think I'm better than everybody. I said, no, bitch. I work hard to get where I'm at. I work hard to keep my daughter becoming a teenage mom. My daughter is the first one, Mark, in 3 generations to graduate high school. She's the first one to ever go to college in 3 generations that I can remember. So to get my daughter to that point, not her be pregnant, you know, not her being on drugs, not her dropping out, not giving me problems, that was a milestone. When that girl walked down that aisle and got that high school diploma, I cried so hard. But my daughter sitting there like, what are you crying for? I said to myself, if you knew what I went through in life to get you to this point, the cycle is finally broken. Mm-hmm. The cycle is finally broken in my family because nobody graduated. I had my sister's oldest daughter. She did graduate.
Yeah.
But the rest of her girls, pregnant, on drugs, babies the low. These bitches have babies don't even cost money. And I had to explain to my niece, do you know when you have these kids and you go on welfare and you sell your kid's social security number and people get tax money for it? Do you know where that money come from? That's not your fucking money. Those are people who pay their taxes, taking out of their money, giving it to you. Like your Uncle Gary, who makes good money, but got to put back into the system to help your lazy ass. It's inherited. Being lazy is inherited.
But it's all, yeah, but also this weird fear of betraying the shit. Like they're like, I don't want to betray the shit that, you know, that I live in. That's amazing to me that it took you 4 months just to convince her. It's like, you're not betraying anybody by getting out of that shit.
But that's how you think. Oh, I got to stay real to what I am. Fuck them. Do you know I only go see my family when they die? at a funeral. I'm not taking my kids around that shit. They fight at funerals. They don't mind cutting the shit out of each other. They don't mind acting a fool. After I got out of there with my husband, I never looked back. My kids wasn't around that shit. My kids went to good school system. I work with my kids. I don't hide my background from my kids. My kid, I dropped out of school in the fucking eighth grade. I mean, I have a son that's 28 and a daughter that's 27. Both of them graduated, and I have two teenagers now. I don't have problems out of, but it's not easy.
You have two new younger kids.
Yeah, by my husband, I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old.
Oh, that's that's going well.
That's going well, but I don't fucking sugarcoat nothing. My daughters, they know all my kids know my background. Right. They know I had kids young. They know I dropped out. I'm always telling them, society don't owe you shit. What you put into life is what you're gonna get out of life.
Right.
So don't waste your time putting nothing into life and thinking society owe you shit. I grew up thinking society owed me something because I had two babies by a married man. I fucking dropped out of school. I had actually convinced myself that I never had a beginning. So why should I be out here working and doing what I'm supposed to do right, trying to get my life back together when I never had a chance? So I was at my lowest point. I was like, fuck it. Nobody gave me a chance. I got pregnant at 13. I dropped out of school. What the fuck am I supposed to do with an eighth grade education? But then my husband was like, society don't owe you shit. Stop crying about the shit that you went through and do something with your life. What you gonna do now? You still alive. I could see if you was dead and you was complaining, but you still alive.
Where's he from?
He's from Atlanta too.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
And not from the same neighborhood?
No, he grew up with a mom and daddy. It's 16 of them, and you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They a little more
with
stability.
The church every day. Yeah.
Church, family.
Yeah, family. Family not, comes first.
Not chaos.
Not chaos. Because when I tell these stories to him, he's like, oh fuck. Sometimes he can't believe it, and he black.
Well, that's it. Well, that's also an interesting thing. The difference between, I mean, Chris Rock talked about it too. But there's, what is the tension between middle class blacks and where you come from? Is there judgment? Is there weirdness?
Yeah, it's judgment because, you know, I consider myself a middle class black, but when I go around my family, they be like, oh, you so bougie, you think you this. No, motherfucker, I go to work, I pay my taxes. It's called go to work and work hard, and if that job ain't working out for you, go get another goddamn job.
And what do they respond to that?
Like, oh, fuck you, you bougie, you this, you that. Oh, you could do the same shit I did.
When did you have this... The moment of clarity, was there a moment where you're like, fuck? I mean, outside of, in retrospect, because you said you were on the streets, you were selling, you didn't end up hooking, which is good, right?
Nah, I wasn't selling no pussy. That's too much work. And man, you know, crackhead brought the price of pussy down, so you was only getting $5 for blowjob, and I'm not into that anyway, and I'm not selling no pussy. Too hard to clean out, Mark, for $5.
Yeah.
I think I just started, you know, I had a...
Jail time, though?
Yeah, I went to jail for trafficking drugs.
How long?
A year.
Was that a fucking wake up call?
Well, you know what? That set me down, Mark, and it made me, I missed my daughter kindergarten year, and that shit hurted me. And it also ruined the relationship with my daughter. For years, we could not bond. Because to her, I was a bad person. Let me back up and let me tell you why. Because my daughter, I sold drugs in front of her elementary school.
Elementary school students?
No. In front of her school was where my trap was.
Right. Okay.
And everybody knew that my daughter mom was on that corner selling drugs every day. And I think the principal did this shit on purpose. He always put her classroom on the side where I sold drugs at. So she would see me out there. And so one day she tell me, she say, you know, mama, I really want to transfer. And I think she's like second grade. And I was like, why? She's like, because I get tired of looking out of my school when seeing you sell drugs in front of my school. And that shit hit me in the chest like a brick. But of course, I'm in the hood and I got to be tough. I was like, I don't want to hear that shit. I was here first. I'm grandfathered in. We're going to find you another school. So, you know, that's how I'm thinking, you know, not being just as a fucking dumbass.
Right.
So when I missed her kindergarten year, it kind of started me saying, I got to get my shit together.
Yeah.
And she didn't like me for years. We still getting back together now. Because
28-year-old?
Well, we're a lot closer now. Plus, let me say this. My 28-year-old is gay. So that's another thing. I've been to prison. I didn't like gay women. And all I talk about, I hate gay people. I hate gay bitches. And then when my daughter came out to be gay, and I was like, well, why do I hate gay bitches? They didn't rape me. Well, you know, who am I to judge somebody for their fucking sexuality?
Right.
And realize I fucking love my daughter-in-law. I got a new daughter-in-law who's white that look like fucking Justin Bieber's or
So you okay
Robin
with that?
Robin Thicke. Well, I had to learn. You know, I had to learn.
Well, that's something else that comes from growing up. In the black community,
because we don't, well, oh my God, you gay, you outcast. But, you know, you take away that person's sexuality, judge them for their character. Who are they? Are they nice? Are they respectful to you? Do they treat you like a human being?
Right.
That's what it all come down to.
But you had to learn that, too.
I had to learn that, too. I learned everything. The streets taught me shit. I learned shit along the way, and people I started to surround myself around. Like, I told myself when I started to get my life together, I said, if you didn't have a college degree, I didn't want you to be my fucking friend. I needed somebody I could learn from.
Right. But in retrospect, you know, you have all these stories. And it seems that that most of the wisdom that you got from those stories was actually saying, fuck that. The wisdom was hard earned because you had to learn how to unlearn that shit.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, outside of like doing what you had to do to get by and rising above it, it seems like a lot of the wisdom of the street doesn't necessarily serve you in life.
It doesn't. I mean, it teach you fucking bad habits. I mean, you think you're going to...
It's some good stories, though.
It's some good stories, though. I mean, they made for good stories. I'm over this shit. But, I mean, come on now. 16-year-old with two kids selling crack. Think about that. I was like, how the fuck did I get by? You know, I remember being in the car one time with my daughter, and this dude was shooting at me with my fucking baby in the car. So I'm like, lay down. But, you know, after a while, you start to train those kids to the ghetto. You hear shooting, you hit the fucking ground. Just like the firefighter used to come to the school and say, hey, you ever on fire, drop, roll, and shit like that. Trying to teach them survivor skills.
Yeah, yeah.
But my daughter hated that shit. She was like, she told me one day, she was like, you gonna get me killed on Ashby Grove. She was so fucking scared of Ashby Grove. I remember being in a house gambling one night, and my daughter in the living room playing with her dog, and I used to shoot crap like a motherfucker. And these guys started arguing. I'm like, man, y'all, come on. So they started arguing. It was like $50 to get in. One guy just shot the other guy in the chest. And my daughter jumped up like a fucking jackrabbit and ran out that door, and they just shooting in the house, and I'm crawling out the house, you know, trying to get away from them, hoping I don't get shot. My fucking daughter, I'm not lying, I think she ran almost a mile. We had to get in the car to go get her. We couldn't stop her.
Yeah.
And when I got her, she was like, you gotta get me killed. You gotta get me killed.
How old was she?
Probably about 5 or 6.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, and she remember that kind of shit. But my son was a baby. He was a toddler. But she, you know, a smaller kid. But
well, you remembered your grandfather shooting off some lady's fingers. How's she not going to remember that shit?
Of course.
Guns make an impression.
Yeah, I mean, because... And I started to realize, like, I'm exposing my kids to the shit I was exposed to. I tell you this quick story. My grandfather, we stole some food stamps when we were little, my aunt, because Pac-Man was out. And we used to fucking love Pac-Man. Yeah. To me, Pac-Man was escape away from the bootleg house. So, we didn't have no money. I used to have a lot of money, but my mama taught me how to go in drunk people's pocket when they fell asleep at the lookout. Mm-hmm. And for every wallet I got $5 per wallet.
From your mother?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As long as I put the wallet back, take the money out, and she give me $5 per person. Mm-hmm. So this weekend, I didn't get any money. Then enough people fall asleep, I guess.
Yeah.
So I get my brother go in there and steal my aunt food stamp. So back in the day, you could buy a 10-cent piece of candy, and they'd give you 90 cents back. So you just stay in there and play Pac-Man all
right.
day. So we get back to the house. It's about 10 of us. We all promised we won't tell who stole the food stamp. We get back, and my granddad and aunt is awake. And he was like, where's the fucking food stamp? Now, my granddad is a big old black man. It kind of looked like a big old ape, dark, with long plaits, and scary as fuck. So we standing there, and I think I might be the youngest of the group, and we standing there looking at him, and he was like, who stole the fucking food stamp? So he just grabbed a chair, threw a rope up in a beam that was in the ceiling, grabbed my cousin Fat Man, put the rope around his neck. He said, now I'm going to hang every one of you Negroes if y'all don't tell me who stole the food stamp. He pulled that chair away from up under my cousin, and I almost shit it. I don't know if you ever seen a black man hanging, but that is the most scarified shit as a kid.
Never seen that.
Oh, Mark. I was like, granddaddy, aunt stole the food stamp. I don't want to die before Miss Pac-Man come out.
What happened to your cousin Fat?
I think it was like a quick hang, but to me, he was up there for 10 minutes, Mark. I almost shitted my pants. And all I'm thinking about, oh my, because he was like, I'm going to start from the youngest to the oldest. I was like, hold on, goddammit. I'm the youngest. Am I next? Oh, hell no. You got to be told on.
Oh, my God. Those are some hard life lessons.
Yeah. So
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Now, you so did you know? Did was religion part of your life?
Yes, I thought it was. We grew up Christians, and like we went to church, but my mama went to church with a hustle in mind. So like we went to different churches on Sunday, and we would get baptized mm-hmm. because back then the church cared about you. If you joined the church and get baptized, they would pay your help you with your bills.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting baptized like 25 times because this was my mama fucking hustle, and I didn't even know you only supposed to get baptized once. When my mama would open the phone booth, like, "Yeah, we're gonna join this church right here today." they gonna help with the utility. Well, the thing was is for them to help us, we had to be baptized. Right. So she was scared of the baptism. I was like, "I'm tired of this baptizing shit." Mom, shut the hell up. You want to eat? So when they get through baptizing, the church was giving my mama, a check for her utilities and a box of food. Right. And that was our hustle.
Every week.
Almost every week, Mark. When we discover white churches, oh my God. They want to baptize you, kiss you, give you clothes, give you extra boxes of food. And oh, my mom would go out there and give them sad stories and shit. And she would say, "Don't you niggas smile one time while you at your church." Like, who want to smile when you get us baptized 2-3 times a fucking day?
That's a hell of a racket.
Yeah, so I didn't even realize it until I'm talking to my girlfriend one day. We saw our baptism. And I was like, "How many times you been baptized?" She was like, "Once." I was like, "Why? I got baptized 25 times." And she thought that was the funniest shit ever. She was like, "Who in the hell baptized you 25 times?" I said, "Well, who in the hell only baptized you once?"
Your mom didn't have the angle.
Yeah.
She didn't realize what she could get.
I asked my brother, I said, "Do you remember getting baptized a lot?" He's like, "Hell yeah." "One thing I know, I should get into heaven. I'm one nipple less, and I've been shot twice and hit by a dump truck, and I've been baptized 25 times.
Oh, yeah. What was it? The dump truck story is the same as the nipple story?
Nah, I jumped off an overpass. I saw my baby daddy cheating. So the overpass one day, I was fucking crazy when I was young, and I jumped on to his fucking truck.
From the overpass.
Yes. He's like, "He didn't see me." I was like, "You fucking saw me in the air hollering, 'What the fuck is this bitch doing in your car?'" When I was young, I didn't think I could die. I was fucking crazy.
Did you break anything?
Nah, I fucked up my leg, though. I fucked up my leg. I jumped my young ass, and I was a lot smaller. Overpass ain't really that high.
Yeah. So what was this Jimmy Carter story?
Oh, God. I was, when I was getting my life back together, when Bill Clinton was, no, was it Bill Clinton? Yeah, Bill Clinton was in office the first time. He created the Welfare to Work program. Mm-hmm. So that's when you had to go to work. You couldn't sit on your ass anymore. Yeah. So I get this job at McDonald's, and I'm working at McDonald's, and I'm doing like most people at McDonald's. And in my neighborhood, I'm stealing a couple of dollars out the register every day. So I had just stole some money, and this black van started circling around the building. And I'm like, "Holy fuck, they done caught me stealing. I'm going back to jail." Because it was black with 10-1, everybody know that's the fucking police.
Yeah.
So this white dude get out with a nice suit and a plug in it. It was Secret Service.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, like, who the fuck is he? And he hit an earpiece, and he was like, "It's clear, send them in."
And you're at the counter? You're at the register?
I'm at the register. Walked Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember his name for shit because Jimmy Carter fucking a 70s president. Yeah. I was born in the 70s. And he get to my register, and I talk to him like somebody on the street. So I look at Jimmy Carter, and I was like, "Nigga, where the fuck I know you from?" And Secret Service fucking lost it. And I got a straight face because everybody's an N-word in the hood. That's how we talk to each other. Right. And Jimmy Carter's like, young lady. I was like, "You look familiar." He turned pink, Mark. He turned pink. And the boy and the girl's like, "Patricia, that's the president." And I turned around and said, "I told you I know you, nigga. Your cheeseburger free." Jimmy Carter did not smile. I always wonder where he would remember me.
I would hope so. If anything, for the free cheeseburger.
I guess it was a cheeseburger, a side salad, and a water. And he was the only person in that McDonald's that, because we were just bullshitting. I just stole a few dollars out the register. And we just standing there, I'm smiling, can't wait to clock out. And in walked Jimmy Carter. And I called my husband. My husband is a very intelligent guy who reads all the time. Been in the military and shit. I said, "Oh, that nigga Jimmy Carter just left out of here." He was like, "Pat, please don't. Tell me you didn't say that." I said, like, "Yeah, I told that nigga I know him." He's like, "Oh my God." I asked my husband, "Why did you marry me? Was you trying to save somebody?"
So you were already married when you went into jail?
No. I got married after I got out of jail, and I was 19.
So you're 19, you got two kids, and where do you meet the man that's going to marry you?
I meet him at a Bruce show. It was a lip singing comedy show.
Uh-huh.
So you either lip sing or you did comedy. So
Bruce.
Yes. Yeah. So his brother.
Is that your first comedy show?
That was the first comedy show I had ever been to.
Uh-huh.
And we went there for a night out, and I was like, "Hey, fat boy, you kind of cute." And in my head, I already had a now hiring baby daddy sign out. Uh-huh. I needed a baby daddy quick because I had a young black man that was growing up in the ghetto, and I needed somebody to show to be a father. And when he
and the other guy that shot you, and is he out of the picture completely? Did you?
No,
finally-
no. No, no, no. I'm still in love with this Negro now at the time.
Yeah.
But when I met my husband, yeah. and I was like, ching, ching, baby
right.
daddy
right.
material. He had all his back teeth.
Yeah.
He was intelligent.
yeah.
His tennis shoes was clean.
Yeah.
And he had a job.
Yeah.
And later on, I found out he had good credit. Now, I know you don't date black men, but it's hard to find them with good credit and a job and back teeth. So to me, I hit a fucking jackpot.
And he liked you.
I think he liked me.
You just walked up to him at a Bruce Bruce show?
No, we was all hanging out together.
Oh, okay.
He came with his brother, and I came with my sister-in-law.
Oh,
we was
okay.
all just talking. I was like, he was kind of about Ice Cube size.
Uh-huh.
He's bigger now. But I was like, hey, fat boy, you want to split some wings?
That was your line?
That was my line. He was like, who the hell you calling fat? You know, he just got out of the military. He think he all fit and shit.
Yeah.
And so I just started talking to him. And at the time, I was into forging chicks. So I would tell him, I done did a lot of shit, Mark. So I was like, hey, we traded numbers. So I said, hey, come over to my house and give me a ride, you know, to Macy's or whatever. And I get you a couple of polo shirts and shit like that.
You're going to buy him some shit.
Yeah, I'm going to buy him some shit. He was like, I don't want that stolen shit. You know what he said?
He saw you right through you, huh?
Yeah, because he's not, he made me stop doing all this shit. So he would come over to the house and shit, and I was like, well, let me borrow your car so I can go out here and hustle. And he would watch my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember one time he told me, because he got tired of me just breaking the law. He's like, if you leave, I'm going to, because I told him all these fucked up stories. He's like, if you leave these kids here with me, I'm going to touch them. I said, oh, hell no, y'all get in the car. This nigga talking about touching y'all. But he did that. So like, he told me, he's like, I'm going to smoke drugs if you don't start selling drugs. So uh-huh. I just gave it all up.
He must have been in love with you.
I think he was.
I would say, why would he put himself through that?
And people ask him all the time, because after we got married, immediately I got cussed at my sister for a kid. So here we are, I'm 19, he's 21, and we got six kids, and ain't now one of them his. And his mom was like, why would you stay with her? Who wants somebody with six kids right off the bat? You 21. You just got out of military. Why are you with this, you know, this crazy ass girl?
And what'd he say?
He didn't. He just said, I like her.
So how the hell did you get rid of the other guy?
Well, you know what? When I went into the relationship, he started dating a crackhead named Tinkerbell. And I was like, that's it. But I was still in love with him. So when I needed a place to live, right, because I was getting evicted from my apartment. So my husband, well, at the time, just somebody who was giving me a ride, which my husband now, he said, I will go and get you an apartment. He fucking went and got me an apartment. And I said, well, I really can't pay the rent. Can you move in with me? So we moved in together. And I told him up front, I said, look, I've been through a lot.
Yeah.
I really still love Daryl. I said, I love him a lot. I said, but I think I can grow to love you. I said, I like you. I'm attracted to you. I can kiss you, but I don't love you.
Wow.
And he accepted it. And I grew to love him. And he's my fucking soulmate.
That's heavy, man.
Yeah, that's heavy. Because I asked him all the time, I was like, why did you stay?
But that kind of honesty in that moment, I mean, you didn't have to do that. I mean, that's like rolling the dice. How do you know he's going to stay with you? He could have just said, fuck this.
Yeah, when I went and got my sister kids, he packed it. She's like, oh, fuck, you got six kids. What am I going to do? And I said, what I've been through in life, all I'm asking you is to help me give these kids the opportunity that they're never gonna get at my sister's house with my sister smoking crack. I don't want these kids to be molested. I don't want these kids to drop out. Just help me. And he stayed.
Huh.
And we raised those kids like, you didn't even know that those were my nieces until we was out in public and they called me auntie. Because here we are, 19 and 21, I think,
six kids.
And I didn't even have any kids. I had to go, because I had an abortion earlier that damaged my cervix. So I had to go and damn near get fixed to have another baby.
No, you two didn't have any kids, but you had the two.
I had the
and
two.
Four of hers.
Yeah, four of hers.
And that's the one that you had to give the lecture to recently? One of her kids?
Yes, one of her. Because we had them for 10 years. So my sister come back and she take them, Mark, which told me to, and everybody was like, oh, she should have her own kids. I said, y'all don't realize what I'm telling y'all. This person is my mama all over again.
Yeah.
These kids are going to end up like we did. And they all got on drugs. And they, well, my oldest one there, her oldest one there, but three of them got on drugs, had kids, and all kind of shit they went through.
Right back after 10 years.
After 10 years, like, I didn't teach them shit.
Oh, my God. How's your brother? The one you talked to about being baptized, are they? I mean, do you have?
He did a lot of time in prison. He used to be like a cat burglar.
Uh huh.
And so, I have to call him sometime because what I'm doing now, I'm writing a proposal for a book about my life.
Yeah.
And so, I had to call him the other day and say, "Did Uncle Peanut teach you how to steal?" And he was like, "Yes." So a lot of time I have to
do some research
because a lot of this shit I'd be like, "Is this real?
Mm-hmm.
Did this really happen?"
You just needed to be validated by your other siblings.
Yes. Did this really go on?
Am I remembering this properly? He shot her fingers off, right?
Yeah. And so when I called my, well, he was like, "Well, he shot in the foot too," and I was like, "Well, I don't need all that information. I just remember him shooting the shit out of her."
What other questions did you have that you were unclear on?
Like, I have to ask my sister, when we lived in one house, did my mama cook in the fireplace?
Yeah.
I said, "Am I remembering this right?" Because she would make us. We never had light and gas at the same time. You either had one or the other.
Yeah.
You never had fucking electricity and gas. We took so many cold baths. By the time I got older and got a real fucking bath, I think I lost 20 pounds.
So she did cook in the fireplace.
Yeah, she cooked in the fireplace, and she cooked outside on the barbecue grill.
Uh-huh.
Like, we live near the school, So she would go out there and fry chicken on the barbecue grill with wood, and the kids would walk by and be like, "Oh, Patricia, I'm out there cooking chicken on the barbecue grill," which was fucking embarrassing. I was already the dirty poor kid, and your mama out there cooking food on the barbecue grill? Where they do that at? I mean, not even with charcoal, Mark. It was fucking wood. Yeah. And she's like, "Shut the fuck up and go get more wood so I can cook this cornbread." So...
So you got that. What else did you have to fact check?
Just shit like, you know, the type of drugs mama was on. Mm-hmm. Was it really weed or was it something else? And
no one got strung out on heroin?
Black people don't do that shit, Mom.
No, okay.
Who the fuck black gonna fuck with some hair? We ain't shooting shit at all. We ain't got no health care. We don't even want no fucking tetanus shot. We don't even want a fucking 3-month-old shot. How many black people you see on heroin?
I don't know.
The ones with the money that grew up around white people. Black people do crack and weed.
Right, okay.
And fucking embalming fluid now. All that other shit they into.
Right.
Like they weed, the wet weed and shit.
Yeah.
I don't too much know that many black people on heroin, do you?
No, I don't.
I'll tell you one story. Heroin hit the black community in the 90s. In the early 80s.
Well, heroin was sort of old school. I mean, I guess it was probably the 50s and 60s and, you know, that it was around. Before crack, there was heroin.
Yeah. So in my neighborhood, when we lived in Vine City, you either bought heroin or you bought crack. But crack was more popular. But I had a neighbor who shot heroin.
Yeah.
And I my mama shot up every day because she was a diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw my neighbor shoot up what I thought was diabetic medication. Yeah. But when he shoot this shit, I don't know what it did to him. He had to get naked. And the kids be out there playing. You got this grown ass man with this big old black dick just swinging it, hollering, "Get the rat out of my ass." But he always wanted me to get the rat out of his ass. And so I'm sitting there looking up his ass like, "J-Bell, ain't no rat in your ass."
He thought he had a rat in his ass?
He thought he had a rat in his ass.
Every time he shot up.
And he's like, "Get the rat out of my ass." And I remember one time looking at his ass like, "J-Bell, the rat hanging in the front. Ain't no rat back here. Your diabetes messing up." But nobody tried to make him put his clothes on. Every weekend, we saw J-Bell naked as a fucking bird.
And high as fuck.
High as fuck. And he'd be all on top of the car, all on top of the fucking sign. People like, "Oh, that's J-Bell. He high. When he come down, he gonna put his clothes on." And we'd be like, "Oh, look at J-Bell sitting up there naked. Just naked as he could be." I mean, dick slaying everywhere in front of the kids.
You thought it was just the diabetes.
That's my only encounter with heroin. When he shot that shit, he got naked.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of funny, you know?
More energy than most junkies that I know.
Well, I stopped going to watching wrestling after I moved in that neighborhood because you saw everything. Like, you saw the fucking bootleg man at that time. I saw a bootleg man stab a dude in the eye for trying to run out on some shots.
What do you need wrestling for?
Yeah. out. I was like, this shit is on my back foot and it's real and it's going down. And then the police show up and beat everybody ass. And then you just wait on the next fight to break out.
So when did the, so you get with the new man, you got your sister's kids, he's 21, you're 19, you're raising six kids and he's working.
Hell yeah. He was working at Simmons Mattress.
And then when does the comedy thing start to happen for you?
My comedy started happening. I take a trip to the welfare office, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, all I had to do was tell white women these horrible stories. That was my game. The more horrible these stories are, the more, oh, you need more food stamps and you need more welfare. And I hope you just heal from all your pain. It was a fucking gimmick I had. Yeah. If the caseworker was right, white, that was more horrible the story was going to be. And I get in there crying, I didn't have a chance. So one time I go to recertify for my food stamps and stuff. And it's a black caseworker. I'm like, oh, here we go with this shit. I got to work hard to convince this bitch. This shit is horrible. And I started telling her these stories, and this lady bust out laughing.
Yeah.
Just bust out laughing after I tell her the hanging story with my granddad. She was like, this stuff is hilarious. You should be a comedian. And yeah. I'm like, bitch, I didn't come here for no job. And she was like, this stuff is funny. And Mark, I never thought this stuff was funny. And she was like, I'm telling you, you could be like Richard Pryor. And I'm like, who the fuck is Richard Pryor? And then she was like, you could be a comedian. So I leave.
You didn't know who Richard Pryor was?
I didn't know shit about comedy.
Yeah.
Wasn't no comedy where I come from. It was all surviving pain.
Yeah, but he was a big movie guy.
His name didn't ring a bell in the welfare.
Right.
Once I went home and I Googled him, I was like, oh. And then I realized, and I started Googling like his salary. I was like, you make all that money from telling your business? All these years I've been telling this shit for free. And so I told my husband, I was like, my caseworker say I'm funny. But people have always told me I was funny. And he was like, here we go with this shit again.
Yeah.
And so I convinced the girl who actually had a baby by my baby daddy. She was the one he showed up at the hospital with when I was 14 and gave birth. We ended up moving around the corner from her.
Mm-hmm.
So we both had a baby by Daryl.
Yeah.
So I convinced her one night to come to go to open mic with me. In Atlanta.
Where, what club?
It was a fucking little pub.
Mm-hmm.
It was called a pub.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a little open mic at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there, and I can just come out the
white,
top of my
black?
Head. It was white and black people.
I
just told a story about my brother being a cat burglar, and they laughed. I was like, oh, I'm a comedian. I got this shit figured out. Shit, I didn't realize this shit was work. But that's when it first sparked that I was funny.
And when did you start working?
When I moved to Indianapolis, I started to get my set together. I started to be more honest with who I was, to talk about my life. Because I was like, you know, I was like most black female comedians. Oh, I suck dick, I do this. And I was like, well, I really don't suck dick. I got vertigo. Why am I sitting up here telling all these lies?
Mm-hmm.
And people was like, won't you just be honest? Tell people you sold drugs. Tell people what you did. Tell people you had two kids.
Who told you to do that?
Just other comics was like, won't you be honest with yourself? Tell people you had two kids.
At white comics or black comics?
Black comics. Mm-hmm. Tom Simmons was one of them. You know Tom Simmons?
Mm-mm.
Well, he was one of them. So, and I was like, I don't want to tell nobody that horrible shit because I was still embarrassed by it. I mean, I'm still kind of embarrassed by my past.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started to kind of, when I got to Indianapolis, I would tell like the guy who worked at the club, the story. He's like, talk about him on stage. I was like, nobody had no baby at 16 but me. I thought that shit only exists in the ghetto. When I tell people me and my daughter is 12 years apart, people from all walks of life. I was just in Chicago and a white lady whispered in my ear like she was rich. She said, I had my first baby at 14 too. I was like, what the fuck?
Well, it's interesting because it you know, a lot of white people have stereotypes in their head about what black people are like and that, you know, that kind of stuff happens. But they use it as a negative. So when you get up there and tell the truth of your experience in an emotional way and you frame it in your life, then it humanizes the whole thing and it just sort of disrupts all that
shit. And you know what I get constantly every day? I get emails saying I am an inspiration. I was like, how the fuck am I an inspiration? And people's like, oh, I just wish I could be so honest with my past like you are and talk about it. I said, just talk about it. To me, it was a healing process. I mean, I'm learning not to be ashamed of what I went to. It's not my fault that, you know, I was born into that situation and, you know, that I guess it's kind of my fault. I had two kids by the time I was 16.
I don't know, you were a kid.
I was a kid. So I just try to take it and say, I'm going to take what was supposed to be horrible and turn it into something good. So when I started to talk about, you know, what I've been through in life, the shooting, the beating on, the mistreatment of, you know, my baby daddy and everybody else, it healed me. I'm beginning to heal.
Yeah.
You know, I no longer have that cloud over my head. Ashamed and, you know, of the hurt of, you know, having two kids by, you know, by a married man and all that bullshit. I'm healing now.
Yeah.
So every time I'm on stage and I'm telling you this, it's a way for me to heal.
Yeah, and it heals everybody. I mean, honesty is powerful shit.
It's powerful shit, and people love it.
Oh yeah, it's the only way to go, and a lot of people just aren't cut out for it. I have no problem with people that write jokes and stuff, but if you come from the heart and you're straight up, I mean, yeah. It, you know, a lot of people are like, whoa, shit. But then they're like, it means something.
Yeah, and I get that all the time. You know, I do, and I get a lot of oohs and ahs at my shows. And I said, you know, what you want me to do? I can't sugarcoat it. I mean, I don't know who the fuck you came to see. I'm going
to
tell you what I've been through.
Yeah, that's the way
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, come on, soccer moms. You've been through some shit, too.
Maybe.
You know, they've been through some shit. Sure. I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, I got more white fans than anything.
But they're feeling ashamed about little shit. And if you're owning big shit, they're like, oh, my God, what am I hiding from?
You know, I get that a lot. People's like, fuck, I thought my life was fucked up. I'm never going to complain again, Miss Pat. I get that all the time. I say, so, oh, you think your mama taking your iPod was bad, huh? Trying to fucking breastfeed a baby at 14 and you don't know the nipple's supposed to go in the mouth and you trying to make the baby just suck the top of the titty.
Your mother didn't even teach you that?
No, I was at the hospital. It was in the 90s when teenage pregnancy was so big.
Yeah.
So big in the ghetto that people was like, you know, the nurses was so fucking mean. Oh, in here having a baby at 14.
So you know,
I
remember,
well, yeah, was like, I had an African nurse and she went to draw my blood. And I was like, oh, that hurt. She was like, did that dick hurt?
Oh my God.
I said, a dick don't have a point on it like that. that point is rounded off and it's soft, bitch. You know it's soft, right?
Yeah, right.
And it feel good once it get through the walls. You know, you in here pulling something out of me. Fuck is wrong with you? They were so mean to me because here I am 14 and then they you know,
like you haven't learned your fucking lesson.
Yeah, then I return the next year giving birth. Mm-hmm. Oh, you back again, bitch?
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's crazy? Mm-hmm. Because he signed my kid's birth certificate and I was 14 and he was 22 or 23 and nobody says shit.
See, that's the thing that's getting me through the whole thing. And these fuckers are child molesters.
Yes.
And they're blaming you.
You do that shit. You do it today, you'll go to fucking jail. You go down there, you take your grown ass down there and sign a 14-year-old birth certificate, you're going to jail.
I don't know.
He signed both of my kids' birth certificates.
How the hell is that possible?
Nobody was there to protect me. Nobody stood up and said, hey, this is fucking child molestation. Why and this dude is in fucking jail? Why isn't he in jail?
Oh, man.
Nobody.
That's the one part of the story that's like, because like you hear about all the other shit, but it really is just, it's overlooked. No one's there to protect. That's the problem with where you come from, is that there is no one there to protect
nobody
you.
Nobody gives a fuck.
Exactly.
Nobody gave a fuck.
Well, I'm glad that you do.
I do now. I'm thankful nobody got a chance to do to my daughter what was done to me and my son.
And your relationship with your kids is good for the most part.
Yeah, I got great kids. I mean, you know, me and my daughter was going at it when she was in college and she was hiding the fact that she was gay, so she ran away and, you know, she was in college for 3 years and she just couldn't take it.
Mm.
And I kind of figured she was gay a long time ago. We kind of figured she was gay. And she ran away and I hadn't seen her like 2-3 years, so I finally got in touch with her. She was in Virginia. I said, what is your problem?
Yeah.
I said, are you gay? She was like, yes. I said, okay, it's out. Bring your ass home. I miss you. I mean, because she was my firstborn. I mean, I went through a lot to get her to that point. So, you know, nobody, I mean, as a parent, you're going to go through shit. Whether your child is gay, whether they're on drugs, whether they've been rebellious, you know, situations are situations. Everybody's is different.
And you're going to want to be with them at some point.
Yeah, know? And I love my fucking daughter. And I told my daughter, I said, you know what? My daughter have had girlfriends way better than her daddy ever treated me.
Mm-hmm.
I've never known a bitch to pop my daughter in the eye every Friday. Like her daddy did
or
me.
Shoot her
or beat her down. I mean, she had many relationships because she stayed on them a couple of years, but they have treated her the way she's supposed to be treated.
Well, that's sweet.
And that's what I'm happy. I don't give a fuck what you eat or suck on or whatever your preference is, as long as they respect you and love you and treat you like a human being.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
And how's your son?
My son is great. I'm a grandmother. He's working. He don't beat bitches. He graduated. You know, he wasn't college material.
Right.
Oh, God, it was rough getting him out of high school. not because he was a bad kid. He's got a comprehension problem. But he graduated. He's doing great.
And the young ones are?
Let me tell you, I call my oldest one my Medicaid baby, and I call my youngest one my Blue Cross Blue Shield baby.
Uh-huh.
So they don't know the struggle. So they some bougie ass little black kids living in a fucking nice neighborhood. They don't know the struggle.
Do they get along with their half brothers and sister? Do they get along with the older ones?
Yes, they all really close. I don't do that half shit because they daddy raised y'all.
Right,
y'all all is one.
Right, okay.
At least all y'all last names start with an L.
Well, Pat, it was great talking. And I'm excited to be on the show with you tonight.
I'm excited too, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh my God, that's our show, The Amazing Ms. Pat. God, she should write a book. She should definitely write a book. When you hear stories like that, you're like, there's more. How can there be more? It's unbelievable. Go see her if you can. And I hope you dug that. I hope you were engaged as I was in just a world I don't know. And it's heavy, man. It's definitely heavy. Hey, look, before we go, I want to remind you to check out untuckit.com. Shirts made exclusively for men who wear their shirts untucked. Untuckit shirts are designed to fall at the perfect length no matter what your size. Visit untuckit.com and improve your wardrobe today. Use promo code MARK for a special 10% off all purchases. Shipping is free both ways. The fall line was just released. Plaids, Oxford, solids, checks, chambrays, and more fall styles are available now, people. Is that how you pronounce that word? I don't know. The right shirt can make all the difference. Untuckit.com. Promo code MARK. Shirts designed to be worn untucked. That's MARK, M-A-R-C. That's our show, people. Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Get that app. Get the free app. Upgrade to premium. You can stream every episode. The most recent 50 are always free. Leave a comment. Do what you got to do. Oh, my God, this running thing is knocking me out. The smoothie didn't save me. I hope Monkey's okay. God damn it. You had that moment where I'm like, you know, these cats are going to die at some point. And it's sad. But the same day that Monkey was, he was sketchy, you know, for days. Monkey was just acting weird and disjointed. But every time I talk about symptoms on this show or whatever, I get very... you know, very sort of alarmist feedback, which is fine, but it's not, they're not always like, not always the worst thing. But out of nowhere, Scaredy Cat, the Striped Feral, showed up yesterday, right when Monkey was feeling better, and then I had to take him to vet because he's still licking his dick. But it was good to see Scaredy Cat, the Striped Feral. I hadn't seen him in months, looking healthy. This happened before with him. Looks fat even. Someone's feeding that cat. Always gives me hope that Boomer's just somewhere, living large, eating the wet food in a sweet old Mexican lady's house. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Moin, wir sind die Footballerei. Ich bin Kutsche.
Ich bin Flo.
Und ich bin Daniel.
Wir sind aber noch viele mehr. In der Footballerei gibt es American Football Freischnauze, überwiegend die NFL, in ganz vielen verschiedenen Formaten. Da ist für alle was dabei.
Das Frühstücksei zum Beispiel gibt es jeden Montag ab 5 Uhr als Podcast. In der Saison natürlich mit den ersten Reaktionen auf die Spiele des Wochenendes und in der Offseason versorgen wir dich hier mit allen frischen News aus dem NFL-Kosmos.
Dazu gibt es die bunte Welt der NFL in Kutsches Zirkus, hochspannende Kriminalfälle bei Hall of Crime und das Thema der Woche während der Saison in der Footballerei. Show.
Also, Wenn dich American Football fasziniert, wirst du die große Auswahl in der Footballerei lieben. Wir freuen uns auf dich.